The Making of the Man. For this new series, I'll try to couch the title in such a way that the first letter of most of the words are of the same letter. So, Brother Maverick, I might consider Raiders of the Refrigerator as a possible sermon title. Thank you, Brother Maverick. Our text is taken from Daniel, chapter 1, verses 1 to 21. But the key verse for today is verse 8. Verse 8. Let us read it aloud together. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. In his book, The Making of a Man, author Cliff LeClair rewrites a character from ancient Jewish history, but places his character in a contemporary format. The character is Thomas Zabrigan. Thomas had a twin brother, Marcus Zabrigan, not Marcus Crocker. Marcus Zabrigan, who was Thomas's polar opposite. Thomas's perpetual desire to succeed and Marcus's irresponsible approach to life clashed as a result of Thomas's scheming tactics. This led to a family estrangement, an exile that continued for many years and wasn't resolved until an international incident brought the family back together. The back cover of the book reads, "Opening this book will be like looking in a mirror that causes you to stop, evaluate, and redirect your future. It matters not whether you're male or female, young or old. The characters in this story experience many of the same trials that all of us face as we go about our daily life. The beauty of reading about someone else's struggles and their impact is that it gives the opportunity to learn from them without experiencing the results of bad decisions. It is the decisions surrounding these events that contribute to the making of a man." Similarly, the story of young Daniel's decision not to eat the food provided by the king of Babylon contributed to the making of a man. The making of the man, Daniel. But it was not just the food that was the problem. Daniel and his friends were placed in a very dangerous and oppressive situation. Roman numeral 1, the pillaging of a state. The pillaging of a state. Nebuchadnezzar was just coming into power. He had led the Babylonians in the defeat of the Assyrians and Egyptians. The Babylonians emerged from this struggle as the dominant political power of the day. Nebuchadnezzar was successfully leading the troops in subjugating the nations which bordered the Mediterranean Sea. He claimed the crown and began an illustrious reign of 43 years. Letter A, the siege of the city of Jerusalem. The siege of the city of Jerusalem. There is this place called the Rock of Gibraltar, which is a small elevated area of land in the south of Spain controlled by the British. It is 426 meters high and made of limestone. Most of the rock's upper area is covered by a nature reserve, which is home to around 250 Barbary macaques, the famous rock apes. These macaques, as well as a complex and convoluted network of tunnels, attract a large number of tourists each year. At its foot is the densely populated city area, home to almost 30,000 Gibraltarians and other nationalities. Despite long sieges, Nothing could destroy the rock or its people. The history of sieges and military action have inspired the local saying, solid as the rock of Gibraltar, which is used to describe a person or situation that cannot be overcome and does not fail. Nebuchadnezzar's siege of the city of Jerusalem, however, was successful. Verse 1 reads, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. Jehoiakim was the second son of Josiah to be king over Judah. Now his father, Josiah, was a good king. See 2 Kings 22:1 to 23:30 and 2 Chronicles chapters 34 to 35. After his father's death, the Jews had made his younger brother, Jehoahaz, king. But 3 months later, the Egyptians dethroned him and made Jehoiakim king in 609 BC. 2 Kings 23:31 to 34 and 2 Chronicles 36:1 to 4. He was a vassal to Egypt until 605 BC, when Nebuchadnezzar brought him into subjection, after which he was a vassal to Babylon. 2 Kings 23:35 to 24:7 and 2 Chronicles 36:5-8. He was a wicked, wasteful king. Jeremiah 22:13-19, who burned the words of Jeremiah. Jeremiah 36:23. As Nebuchadnezzar swept southward along the Mediterranean, he came to Jerusalem. It appears the Jews submitted to Nebuchadnezzar without a battle. 2 Chronicles chapter 36 verse 6 says, against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and bound him in fetters to carry him to Babylon. Thus, we have the first of 3 waves of captivity and destruction which Babylon brought upon Judah between 605 and 586 BC as a 70-year Babylonian captivity commenced. Now compare and contrast how God dealt with Old Testament Israel with how God chastens believers today. God mostly dealt with Israel as a nation, while today he deals with believers as individuals. God chastened Israel for not keeping the law. He chastens believers not living obediently to him. Letter B, the sacking of the temple of Jehovah. The sacking of the temple of Jehovah. Verse 2 reads, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels in the treasure house of his God. Nebuchadnezzar's success was not due merely to military genius. The Lord sovereignly allowed this victory. The vessels taken from the temple were viewed as a token of subjection to Babylon. These were placed in the pagan temple, indicating that Nebuchadnezzar attributed his success to his pagan god. Let us see the selecting of the children of Judah. The selecting of the children of Judah. In addition to the vessels of gold, selected young men were taken to Babylon as a token of Nebuchadnezzar's conquest. The king enlisted the finest young men for governmental service. He likely sought similar youths from other conquered nations. The recruitment was placed in the hands of Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs. Verses 3 to 4 says, and the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of a king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and who they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Children of Israel means Jews. Of the king's seed and of the princes implies that Daniel and his companions were of the royal and messianic lineage. Children or youths are believed to be about 15 years old. No blemish refers to physical fitness. Well-favored indicates physical appearance. Skillful in wisdom, knowledge, science refers to mental ability. Such as had ability to stand in the king's palace refers to poise and confidence necessary to live in the royal court. They were to be used with potential who could be taught the ways of the Babylonians. Daniel's great potential was dedicated to God and enhanced by him. Verse 17 says, as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Not only do we have the pillaging of the state, we have Roman numeral 2, the preparation of a servant. The preparation of a servant. Nebuchadnezzar took good care of the chosen youths. Since he intended them to be government officials, it was necessary first to win their confidence, appreciation, and intelligence. This could not have been done if the king mistreated them. Nebuchadnezzar initiated the young men into a high-level training program, which combined academic rigor with preparation for royal service, all in an atmosphere of pagan spirituality. But we also have, letter A, the provisions for captives. The provisions for captives. Verse 5 reads, and the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. The food was the finest in the kingdom, as a proper diet would ensure their physical health. The training period was 3 years. It may have been year-round, making it equivalent to a modern college education. All this was done that they might stand before the king. At the end of the training, they were to be appointed to governmental service. Letter B, the people from Judah. The people from Judah. Verses 6 to 7 reads, now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. The fact that only four young men were named serves as a commentary on the other Jewish youths who were taken captive. Apparently, the rest assimilated the Babylonian ways. Only four refused to compromise spiritually. The youth reflected the condition of the nation of Judah. Only a remnant remained faithful to God. The four names of verse 6 are Hebrew names. Each name contained the name of the true God. Daniel means God is my judge. Hananiah means Jehovah is gracious. Mishael is translated, who is what God is? And Azariah stands for Jehovah has helped. The Babylonians gave the young men new names which reference pagan deities. Belteshazzar is, may Bel protect his life. Shadrach refers to command of Aku, the moon god. Meshach stands for who is what Aku is. And Abednego is translated servant of Nebo. Now, why might the Babylonians have changed their names? Because they eliminate any reference to Jehovah and false recognition of heathen gods. The new names would help to assimilate the Jewish boys into Babylonian culture. Separated from family in a foreign land, these Hebrew young men had now lost all traces of their very identities. They will not only be tempted to compromise, but completely able to do so without constraint. Similarly, Christians today are pressured to conform to worldly ways of thinking through many avenues. Some ways the world tries to assimilate Christians into its culture are entertainment and peer pressure. The danger in being assimilated into the world's culture is that a believer may quickly lose sight of godly ways of thinking and priorities. Be careful. Do not compromise. Whether we compromise says as much about God as it does us. What do we communicate about God when we compromise? That we cannot trust Him. That His demands are too unrealistic to obey. That He doesn't care if we compromise. Let us see the purpose of Daniel. The purpose of Daniel. Verse 8, which is our key verse, reads, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor of the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Purposed suggests a deliberate decision and plan of action. Daniel requested to be exempted from the menu because it would be defiling. Although it's uncertain exactly how this might have been the case, we know that strict Levitical rules governed what the Jews ate and how it was prepared. See Leviticus chapter 11 and Deuteronomy chapter 14 verses 1 to 21. The Babylonians would not have prepared kosher food for the Jewish captives. They were instead trying to remove Jewish customs. Now, what excuses might men in Daniel's position have made for eating the food? Possible excuses. It was ordered by the king. There was no alternative offered. Disobedience could result in punishment. Obedience would help in gaining promotions. The food was more desirable than vegetables. Godly authority figures would not find out. The others ate without question. He could also rationalize the fact that God had allowed the circumstances. Do believers today ever use some of these excuses? People today also use their circumstances as their excuse for compromising. They might drink a glass of alcohol to keep from offending a client. They might blame their overeating on an uncaring spouse. They might excuse their anger by blaming their overbearing boss. Be careful. Daniel's decision to avoid the king's food is remarkable. He might well have rationalized that it was permissible to eat the king's food. We should also commend Daniel for the way in which he made the request. He did not lie to cover his true motive, but gave a scriptural reason to his godless superiors. It was an opportunity to witness concerning his belief in Holy Scripture. Although the prince of the eunuchs may not have understood why Daniel found the food defiling, It is certain that he respected Daniel. Verse 9 says, Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. One does not look favorably on a person who is demanding or uncooperative. Daniel had a winsome spirit from the beginning. Read for yourself Daniel chapter 5 verses 12 and 14 and chapter 6 verses 3 to 4. The rapport had been established before the request was made. What can Daniel's response teach us when we face compromising situations? Be sensitive to the opportunity to share your faith in the circumstance. Be bold but winsome. Speak with resolve and conviction. Don't be indecisive or apologetic. Since it was the prince's responsibility to carry out the king's orders, he was reluctant to grant Daniel's request. Daniel was, in essence, asking him to join in endangering both of their lives. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Verse 10. While sympathetic, he feared the king greatly, but his sympathy may have encouraged Daniel to try another approach. It also may have made Melzer more ready to consider Daniel's proposal. This brings us to letter D, the proposal of Daniel. The proposal of Daniel. Legend has it that Newt Rockne was about to face the football team of USC, the University of Southern California. And knowing that was a far superior team, wondered if there was any way he could defeat them. Then he hit on this idea. He scoured the city of South Bend, Indiana, for about 100 of the biggest men he could find. When he had about 100 men, each at least 6'5", and weighing in at least 300 pounds or more, he put them all in Notre Dame uniforms. With the shoulder pads and the helmets, they looked even bigger. Then, when it was time for the game to begin, he sent these men out of the locker room first. As the USC team watched, they just kept coming and coming and coming until these 100 men were all the USC saw. The USC coach kept telling his team, they can only field 11 men at a time. But the damage was done. None of these men ever played 1 minute of the game. But USC had become so intimidated at the sight of them that they were unable to function, and Notre Dame won the game. Kind of reminds us of the 12 spies and Israel as they lost out on, quote-unquote, winning the promised land, even though they never engaged a single one of the giants in battle. How sad it is when we allow ourselves to see the enemy and lose sight of God. What about you? How do you view an obstacle? Daniel did not let the refusal of the prince of the eunuchs deter him. He tried another avenue. Blocked doors are not necessarily closed doors. Daniel found another door in Melzer. Verses 11 to 14 says, Then said Daniel to Melzer, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. Daniel proposed a 10-day trial period to Melzer. Believe that in this short time, God will intervene and make him physically superior to the others. The trial was short enough that Melzer saw no problem in granting it. Melzer will be the judge. Daniel demonstrated that one can have principles yet be gracious. One can have convictions without being contentious. Saints today must follow this approach when facing compromising situations. Instead of the king's menu, Daniel proposed a diet of vegetables. Pulse. Pulse is that which is grown from seed. Daniel's reasoned request was accepted. Here is an example of God honoring one who honors him. Yet, we must not assume that God will always manifest his honor in this manner. Letter E, the product of testing. The product of testing. Verses 15 to 16 says, "And at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzer took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse." At the end of 10 days, the judge rendered his decision. The Hebrew youths had passed the test. They were in fact fairer and fatter than those on the official government diet. While Americans tend to view being overweight as a health problem, in biblical times, the sickly and starving were skinny, hence fatness was desirable. Since the Hebrew youths had done so well on this diet, Melzer continued to allow it. Had they shown adverse effects, he would have demanded that they return to the king's diet. And so with the pillaging of the state, with the preparation of a servant, now we have Roman numeral 3, the presentation to a sovereign. The presentation to a sovereign. The initial problem of the diet having been settled, the youths entered 3 years of intense education, training at the highest level for service in Nebuchadnezzar's court. Letter A, the compilation of knowledge. The compilation of knowledge. While they were sharp youths with great native ability, now trained in the learning of Babylon, the scripture says in verse 17, "As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom." He used Nebuchadnezzar's training system as he also worked in their hearts. And Daniel, their understanding in all visions and dreams. The Babylonians placed great emphasis on dreams and had devised methods of interpreting them. However, Daniel's knowledge of dreams did not come from the study of Babylonian books, but from God. Visions and dreams will become very important parts of his prophetic career. Letter B, the conversation with Nebuchadnezzar. The conversation with Nebuchadnezzar. I know it's hard to spell, do it slowly. Verses 18 to 20 reads, "Now at the end of the days that the king has said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm." At the end of the training, the Jewish youths were given a comprehensive oral exam. Nebuchadnezzar himself was the examiner. His participation in this event shows the level these young men were at. since he was choosing advisors for his cabinet, he wanted to become directly involved. This would have been the first HPST class. Oh, wrong. This would have been the first graduating class after he initiated the program. His examination of the four Hebrew young men found them at the top of the class. Because of this, they received commissions to high office, as indicated by the words, "Therefore stood they before the king." Verse 19. After Daniel and his companions had served for a time, the king also found them 10 times better than his established officials. The phrase was likely a figure of speech, but they were by far Nebuchadnezzar's best ministers. What can Christians do today do to stand out like Daniel? Believe this, that God will care for me when I trust in Him. Finally, let us see the continuation of Daniel. The continuation of Daniel. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. Verse 21. This is not a reference to Daniel's death. He lived at least until the third year of Cyrus. See Daniel chapter 10 verse 1. Rather, it means Daniel still had an official position at that time. Since Cyrus was a Persian king, that means Daniel continued all through the Babylonian period. He served under 7 rulers for at least 70 years in 2 major world empires. Kings and kingdoms fell, but Daniel continued on being used of God to convey marvelous predictive prophecies which Christ in Matthew 24:15 exhorted future generations to understand. The pillaging of a state, the preparation of a servant, and the presentation to a sovereign. This lesson sets the stage for the whole book. Decisions which Daniel made here revealed his character and prepared him for the events recorded later. Daniel chapter 1 contains no direct predictive prophecies, yet is demonstration of God's sovereignty, even in Babylon, prepares us with the prophecies of God's working among Gentile nations. In response to God's sovereignty, young Daniel displayed faithfulness. How did that help Daniel? Again, the back cover of Cliff Leclerc's book, The Making of a Man, reads, "The beauty of reading about someone else's struggles and their impact is that it gives the opportunity to learn from them without experiencing the results of bad decisions." It is the decisions surrounding these events that contribute to the making of a man. As we saw earlier, Daniel no doubt experienced trials and struggles and made certain decisions. These decisions contributed to the making of a man. But there is more. Because Daniel made good decisions, God will also elevate Daniel to become one of the greatest men of the Old Testament. If you read Ezekiel chapter 14, verses 14 and 20, Daniel is counted alongside Noah and Job as one of the righteous. Do you dare to be a Daniel? Do you dare to be a Daniel? In closing, let's all rise to sing, "Dare to be a Daniel." Standing by a purpose true, heeding God's command, honor them the faithful few. All hail to Daniel's band.